Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Angela with the podcast Refocus with Angela Stevens. I am so delighted to let you know about our guest today. You may know her. You may know her sister. You may have read an article about them or one of their blogs. Let me introduce you to this amazing woman. Her name is Susan Cavaretto. She is a professional blogger. She's a single mother of two teenage girls. And her identical twin sister is Janice. And they are the bloggers behind the popular family lifestyle blog of 5 Minutes for Mom. You can find out about them at 5minutesformom.com. So thank you so much for joining us today, Susan. I was delighted to get you on our schedule, and I can't wait to talk to you more about how you focus and how you refocus.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So Susan, by the way, did I say your name right? Did I get the title right? And did I get the background right? Because I want to make sure that I didn't miss anything in that.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Basically, 5minutesformom.com is our main website these days. Janice is my identical twin sister. We live two blocks apart and we each have two kids and we sort of tag team life, parenting together and running our business together. And it's a lot of fun. It's crazy busy, but being twins is lots of fun.
That is so crazy. I don't know if I know of anyone that does that. That is that are twin sisters that have a block together.
Very unique life.
Yeah. Your sisters, do you fight? I mean, everyone fights when they're siblings, but do you and your sister find that you fight?
We fight so much. It's ridiculous.
Okay,
absolutely.
Yeah. And then you come back and you go, okay, we can't do this. Exactly. So that's perfect.
We don't even have to bother apologizing. It's so we absolutely know that the apology is implied.
That is terrific because I know many people who are in business with their family members and sometimes that goes well and sometimes that does not go well. And we were actually going to have you both on, but you divide and conquer as a business. And I admire that. So that very well done. So we're going to jump right in. I always say that I don't like to assume that people know what a podcast is or a blog is. And since you run a blog and it's very popular, would you mind explaining that?
So our blog is basically a family lifestyle website where we share all sorts of content that's of interest to moms and those with, they don't have to, we actually have a section on our site, a little page saying it's not just for moms. We use the term mom to sort of encapsulate everyone that's interested in kids, parenting, family life, all that type of thing. So obviously dads and anyone else that's interested in those types of topics. We share a lot of recipes and crafts and DIYs, as well as parenting topics and other sort of helpful tips and clever ideas, things that can help make life run smoother. And I have a special interest in ADHD topics and learning disabilities as well, because I and Janice both have ADHD, as do 3 of our 4 kids.
Wow.
So we're very interested in that. So you will find on our site several posts already about ADHD and topics also related to mental health, because Janice and I also have the joy of experiencing depression and anxiety, and we've battled that our entire lives. So we're very open on our site about these struggles because we really believe in spreading information and taking away any negative attitudes and stigma towards talking about mental health and learning disabilities and ADHD and these types of topics. So Janice shares her stories and I've shared mine about our battles ongoing with depression and anxiety. So there's a lot of blog posts regarding those specific topics, as well as, you know, how to make chocolate chip cookies and and how to, you know, sew costumes for your kids.
I think that is great. And we love chocolate chip cookies. So please share recipes. But anyway, I think it's really great that you're open about that, because if people don't talk about it, they don't know about it. So I think that it is great that both you and your sister both have an open dialogue about mental health, about ADHD and more, especially during this pandemic. I think there's a lot of anxiety out there and a lot of people are really looking for that direction and that help. I look at my son, he is in college, right? And he has taken most of his semester online. So that's been very different for him. He has ADHD. So he's had some struggles. So I know that if talking about that more brings more awareness to what people can do for both anxiety and depression. Because with anxiety, it's not just for adults. It actually impacts younger children, teenagers, adults, and especially, again, during this pandemic, working from home. So there's not an age when it comes to anxiety.
Absolutely. Anxiety is such a big issue, and it's very related to depression. They're often sort of two heads of the same beast, and they'll transform your serotonin levels in your brain will affect both issues. And sometimes that will show up as anxiety. Sometimes it'll show up as depression. And then there's also other interesting ways that will appear. It can be like irritability and anger and different other emotions that, especially when you're dealing with kids that are having these feelings and emotions that they can't quite understand and handle. And it might come out as them being highly irritable, for instance. And parents might not even recognize that irritability might be related to anxiety, for instance.
Right, exactly. So tell us, if somebody is going to go to your blog, what do they find and what are they interested in? Are they interested in, articles on recipes or on products, or, tell us a little bit about that. Again, they can be interested in relationships or parenting, or, tell us, what is the go-to now that you find that people go to your site for?
Well, it evolves and changes. And we started our blog back in 2006, and blogging today in 2020 and is a very different beast than it was back in 2006. It's evolved, it's changed. There's a lot of us old time bloggers that lament the new era of blogging. It's not as relational as it was in the old days. So it is sad that we don't have, generally the blogosphere is not the same type of connected, follow and read every single post your favorite bloggers share type of place as it was in the early days. So I would say in the early days, from 2006 all the way through 2012, up until say 2015, bloggers really came to know each other very closely. We would have like a blog reader back in the days when Google had its blog reader, and you'd sort of follow a whole set of blogs, and you might check in with your blogging friends all the time. And we'd have many readers that would read like almost every post that we published, leave a comment on every post that we published. But those days are really gone. That's been replaced a lot, unfortunately for bloggers, by the communicating and the sharing, the relationships that happen in Facebook groups and things like that. So it's been a transition. And so for many bloggers have just left the blogging world in the last 5-6 years because of that transition. So it can be a lot harder to sort of reach a consistent audience and have everyone check in all the time. So we evolve with that. And it's five Minutes from Mom, Janice and I had intended it from the get-go to be part of our business. And so we really treat it as a business, and we realize that we just have to go with the changes of the blogosphere and of the online world. So nowadays, most people come to particular blog posts from Pinterest or Google search. That's the huge bulk of our audience these days, often just comes for a targeted reason. They might be looking how to make a costume. One of the big things we like to do are seasonal posts. One of our big seasons is Halloween. My twin sister Janice loves to make elaborate costumes for our kids. She sews. And so we just finished Halloween. That's a big boost in our traffic as people find our costumes on Pinterest or through Google search, and then we'll come and see the pattern and use it that way. Then they might subscribe and come more often. But the honest truth is that these days for bloggers, a lot of that traffic is coming in from search, and people they can sign up. When you come to our site, it will be triggered. A notifications bar will come up. And so we do have a lot of people sign up for the notifications that you'll see. Various websites will come up with certain notifications. You can sign up so that you get notified when we put out a notification or put a new blog post and that type of thing. But the truth is, many people will come for based on search for that particular need, if they're searching for a recipe or this type of thing. And then we will use, obviously, our social media channels. We love Twitter for chatting and stuff, but Pinterest is our biggest traffic source. And then, of course, Facebook and and these other things as well. But it's a lot search-based, so it's a lot meeting individual needs for a particular moment for a recipe, a craft, or if they're searching for something about ADHD or something like that.
You know, it's interesting. When you were talking about how many bloggers have left that industry and are no longer blogging, you know, is that, you know, because time has changed and it seems like all of us don't have enough time in the day, or is it the time invested, or is it just the change that has been evolving through time? Is that why a lot of bloggers have left the industry?
Yeah, things just shift and change so much online and where we as users use our time. And of course, I'm a social media user as I am a social media content creator. Mm-hmm. So I, for myself, I can't sit around and be sad that people don't read blogs the way they did in the old days. I don't read blogs the way I did in the old days either. I will go and search up certain things. And even though I have longtime blogging friends, I don't have the time to read their blogs all the time. So it's not the same reading a journal that somebody's written and keeping up to date with everything that's going on in their lives the way it was, because we see that stuff now on Facebook, right, and that type of thing. So as content creators, as bloggers, we have to become more sophisticated with our content. So for instance, in the old days, we would toss up short little posts. You might not even put a photo in it. You might be journaling about your day and sharing your thoughts and your feelings and some experience that you had, which was really raw and authentic. And people would write this post and just like hit publish without editing it tons and forming it into some masterpiece of writing, right? Whereas nowadays, if you're going to publish a post, you're going to put, for instance, on my blog, we will put several hours into a post. We've got several images. We're going to make pinnable images. We've got to really craft it into a lengthy piece of content. And it takes hours to invest into creating a long-lasting, decent piece of content, which is very different than it was in the old days.
So it's interesting, Susan. Before we had brought you on to the show and scheduled you, I was looking at your background and I was actually fascinated with your experience and background. And I went, oh my goodness, this is not just a mom. This is really an experienced career professional. And Susan has the most interesting background. As I was sitting here looking through her background, get this, everyone, you won't believe this, but she's actually got a computer software background experience as a developer. And this is not just your average blogger. She has got some amazing experience on the technical side. I would never have thought that someone that runs a blog has, especially it with your topics, have that type of background. But how amazing is that, that you have the ability to bring that technical expertise into your blog? I was blown away with such admiration from that.
Absolutely. My life has been a very interesting winding road. Mm-hmm. And I am very grateful for all of my experiences. But in getting the degree and working in the industry, so I worked as a computer developer, as a software business consultant for a big business consulting company. I worked for two companies. So the first 4 years I worked for, in downtown Vancouver for one of the top business consulting companies. And then I switched from there for 2 years to work with our BC Hydro, it was called, with the computing department of that business. And that was fascinating as well. But then I wanted so desperately to become a mom at that stage. And I did not really realize at the time that I had ADHD, but when you look back and put everything into perspective and I analyze my brain and my emotions and my situations, it's fascinating to me to see how everything evolved. But basically after about 6 years in the industry, I was so bored because I wasn't intellectually challenged at all. I was sick and tired of living in a cubicle and just programming. The thing is, with ADHD, which we can talk, I mean, I can talk forever and ever.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me to talk about that. But the point of that matter being that becoming a software developer was such an absolutely excellent skill set to base everything on. In reality, in the workplace, after 6 years, I was bored. I wanted to do something new, and it wasn't, ironically, it's intellectually stimulating enough in the business setting. It gets repetitive and gets boring. And so I wanted to find something where I was more able to be creative and work around my own schedule so that I could start a family and have more flexibility instead of being in an office all day.
Right. Well, Susan, that's what we do, because you and I were talking before the show that we were younger and now I'm showing our age. However, having ADHD was very different for us. When we were younger, actually, no one talked about ADHD, not in our lifetime. And there was a stigma against that. And both of us have that mission of changing that stigma. And back then, I just don't think that we had the knowledge or the resources to have the ability to help individuals like ourselves the way that we do with our children today. And not only that, we had to figure out how to do it on our own. We had to come up with creative ways of dealing with our own ADHD when we didn't even know it. And you're right, individuals like ourselves, we can find ourselves into a corporate environment where we become very talented, very good at what we're doing, but also we become bored very quickly. And then that piques us to want to move on to different things. And basically, we're not feeding that creativity. And that's an inner drive, you know, that people with ADHD have. And I can break that down to our audience, even with my own child. As you know, he is a co-founder of this company, and he had ADHD since the fifth grade. For my son, he actually found that music was very healing and very helpful with his own ADHD. And he played the viola in orchestra from fifth grade to his senior year. And that was in the first hour, which really helped that creative talent and helped get him started on his day. And then after school, he had tennis. So, you know, you've got that creativity for the creative part of your brain. And then also that exercise, and exercise is so important for individuals with ADHD. So having that balance was really important in our case. And so as we all get older who have ADHD, I think we still got to do the same thing. We still have to have that balance and yet maintain our creativity, but also have the outlet. However, we also have to have that organization piece. And that's where a lot of us struggle in the whole organizational area.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And boredom is so dangerous for the ADHD brain. You just don't realize it. It's ironic because people often toss around the thing, being bored is great for kids. And I get that where they're going with that. It's great for kids to have unscheduled time, but it's funny because for me, the word boredom is very triggering because for me and for my ADHD daughter, when we're bored, it can be physically painful. And I don't mean that as to overschedule your child, quite the opposite. In fact, I'd written a blog post right. When she had turned 10 years old, so 5 years ago, about how I guard her playtime so much. I leave so many open hours for extended playtime where it's just open-ended so she can use her own creativity. But boredom is a different thing than just unscheduled time. And for the ADHD brain, being bored can be physically painful.
Absolutely. And for many people, they get stuck. And when they're stuck, they don't know where to go, what to do, and how to feed that ADHD insight of what they need. And for individuals with ADHD, there are so many resources now today that we have that we didn't have before. There is the CHADD organization, CHADD. There is Attitude Mag. There is the Edge Foundation. There is Understood. There's just a lot of resources out there that I would encourage anyone listening to this to look into. And another one that I just remembered was the ADD Foundation, the ADHD group. There's just, again, so many different resources. All you have to do really is just Google resources for ADHD, both in children, teens, and adults, and you'll find so many resources out there. And as I was telling someone the other day, I've got like 55,000 things going on right now, and it's the happiest time that I've ever been in my life. So you have to feed that creativity. So another question I wanted to ask you, Susan, is let's say you have a day that you can write anything that you would like to write about on your blog. What are you going to write about?
Oh, that's a good question. And it would change depending on the year and the time and what I'm going through in my life. Right now, I think what's heavy on my mind and on my heart is advocating for kids with learning disabilities, especially dyslexia, and helping parents to recognize signs of ADHD and to understand how these challenges have their gifts as well, but they are challenges. And we can't, a lot of people do like to say these days, ADHD is just a great thing. ADHD can be fantastic in many ways. It's definitely a factor in many successful people's lives for creativity, but we do need to learn how to manage it. So it's so on my mind these days that right now, if I could just sit down and blog without thinking about any business return or anything for quite a while, I've got a lot of posts in my head that are churning around that I want to write about dyslexia, ADHD, and how that's also related to mental health issues, because definitely ADHD untreated will pretty much for sure likely lead to anxiety and depression. We've got to get ADHD recognized and dyslexia so early. Oh my goodness. It just breaks my heart to think of how many kids end up becoming depressed, turning to drugs and alcohol at different stages because they have undiagnosed and untreated learning disabilities.
Right. And it really is. I know I watched an article just the other night, and the news was reporting about this family where the teenager had really been impacted by this pandemic, but they didn't know that he was really struggling. And so what happened is he actually committed suicide. And they were on the news talking about how pay attention to your child, pay attention to the signs, and really talk with them about, hey, this pandemic is not going to last forever. And so we've just got to get through this. But it was a reminder, you know, that this time affects everyone. And however, there is some good that's come from this pandemic. And one of the things that is good, in my opinion, has been the extra time that parents have had with their child and their teenager. Because, you know, I know that when, you know, before the pandemic, when my son was in high school and in middle school, you know, they had soccer, they had tennis, they had practice after school. Then it was, you know, many kids had football practice. So there was like no time, no downtime for the family. So again, you know, you have to take the good with the bad, but I do think that that has been a good part of this pandemic.
Silver linings. And that's what I continually, ever since the beginning of it, I've talked to my girls about how we will embrace the silver linings of this pandemic. Mm-hmm. And there's always pros and cons to every situation in life. Mm-hmm. And I really believe in searching out those pros and making the best of it. So absolutely, with my two daughters, this year I have embraced spending extra time with them. They're 13 and 15. And I'm homeschooling them while most of the kids here are back in school where I'm at in BC. Oh. Kids went back to school in September. So everyone ended in March, just like everybody did way back then, and then stayed off school and did remote schooling through the school until the summer. And then everyone here went back, but I did not send my kids back because I'm like, it's just the numbers are cases are going to absolutely go up in the fall. And as sure enough, they have. So I'm very thankful that I made the choice to homeschool my 13-year-old. And then my 15-year-old is in distance learning classes and I'm supporting her through those. So basically being the teacher and using the curriculum through the distance learning format so that because for graduation, she needs those courses like explicitly done, you know, writing tests and this and that type of thing. Whereas the 13-year-old, I can be a bit more open-ended with that. And it's been a blessing in many ways. I joke around for my 13-year-old that I got to keep her wrapped in my little little bubbles, keep her safer from the high school environment. Right. Because high school, everyone is constantly saying kids need to be in school for their mental health, And oh my word, school is, yes, I absolutely hear that. And that's definitely an argument for 95% of kids. But there's a lot of kids that school is the cause of mental health problems.
The bullying and the social media and just a lot of things that can happen that we're not even aware of that happens at school. So I absolutely get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, and the pressure from being in the school environment and learning in a school environment, the fact is learning in a class of 30 kids is not ideal for most kids. For instance, my kids don't learn well in that environment. Now for me and my kids, I have chosen to make this sort of sacrifice to my own income earning potential by spending my days teaching my kids, which right. is definitely an impact on the bottom line for my businesses right now. And it's a challenge, absolutely. But I'm trying to focus on the fact that the silver lining is I can actually do a better job of teaching them right now than they can learn in school just based on the way they learn with their learning challenges. And I happen to have a knack for teaching. So not every parent is like, oh, I can do just as good of a job teaching. To have a knack for it.
And so I do have to ask you this question. You have ADHD. Your sister has ADHD. Your children have ADHD. So I have to ask you this question. Are you organized? Is your sister organized?
We are the most disorganized people on the entire planet.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that.
It is real, the challenge of trying to organize paper, clutter, and a household mess literally just can kill my productivity. It can literally just depress me, overwhelm, like the overwhelm of paper clutter, of needing to open mail and process that type of boring bill paying nonsense. Luckily, so much of that gets automated these days. Thank goodness. I can't imagine if I had to do it the way, you know, my mom had to say 40 years ago.
Right. I ordered checks the other day and my husband just looked at me like, what checks? Really?
Every once in a while, there's someone that needs a check. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we're very disorganized. It's an enormous challenge for us. And I won't deny that Janice and I, together with having our ADHD and having kids with ADHD, it is hard. And I get jealous all the time of people that don't have to get overwhelmed by trying to be organized. And it there's no easy answers there.
Do you ever forget your passwords?
I use an online password.
I know that you've
got that great product, which I think is so
awesome. That's right. It's time, the number 2, refocus.com. We have 11 different versions of password books and they're really great. But I always say, do what works for you. I mean, really, we're all different and we all think differently. So do whatever works for you. But if you're looking for a password book, we've got them in 11 different versions. So check us out. And, you know, Susan, you're not the norm.
And I was just about to say that. The thing is I tried to tell my kids and everyone else, like I tell other people that aren't as sort of tech savvy, maybe, oh, you need to be using an online password thing. And then they just don't ever do it because they get overwhelmed by the technology of it. And then they end up using the same password everywhere, which is the most dangerous thing you can possibly do.
Right.
It is so critical to have different passwords on different sites.
It's so funny because you should see the look on people's faces when I ask them that question, or even on the phone or by video. It's just like this pause that happens. It's kind of like, I don't want to answer that question. Do I have to answer that question? And I can attest to this because when we created that product, I struggled with it. I would forget my passwords and I would try to keep them on my phone, but then my phone wasn't charged or my computer wasn't charged. So it was a rounding circle of ADHD.
Oh my gosh. I was going out of my mind trying to find my vacuum charger the other days because everything has a charger now.
Right.
And it drives me nuts. Yeah. I've got cords and chargers and I'm searching all over the house and I finally found it. And Julia, my daughter was like, oh, I knew it was there. I'm like, why didn't you tell me? Yeah. Anyway, yeah, but exactly. Yeah, there's too much stuff to keep track of.
So Susan, do a lot of people talk to you about being disorganized on your blog? Do they actually bring that up?
Oh, absolutely. I would say it's definitely one of people's most common challenges for sure.
Yeah, right. So, and I'm curious, what advice do you give to those individuals? Because not everyone reads your blog. Hopefully they will in time. However, you know, today, if you were going to give advice on that topic, what would that be? You know, specifically, let's say somebody wrote into you and said, look, I'm so disorganized. It's driving me mad. What advice would you give to someone like that?
Well, I would say to keep your systems simple as possible. So all my life, my mother does not have ADHD. Okay. So my ADHD came from my father's side of the family. He, when I look back, obviously had ADHD. He passed away many years ago, but he obviously had it. And so there was 4 of us in the family as kids, and we obviously all have it looking at us now and looking back at our childhood. And my mom does not have ADHD and she's a perfectionist. Okay. So she would constantly have to come in and try to reorganize my life, whether from when I was a child all the way up through being an adult. So she would come in and try and have to rescue me to try to help me. And I absolutely appreciate every single time she's cleaned up my bedroom or my house or my this or that, and then she's tried to help me put in a system to stay organized. The problem is her systems would be too complex, her organization method too perfect. And then I can't maintain it, right? So especially if you have ADHD or you don't like organizing, keep it simple. So my mom would make like just so many organization baskets for me to put things in, or the filing cabinet system was too elaborate, so I wouldn't do it. So you have to keep it simple.
Right. And the other day I was telling my mother that when I was younger, one of the nicest things that she ever did for me was to actually clean up my room. She didn't do that all the time, but just every once in a while I would come in and everything was organized and it was so nice. And I tell her today, but I don't know that she realizes how important those certain times were to me. And I remember them so much today. And the reason for that was it was so peaceful, so relaxing, so calming. And so, I'm not sure if this is the right advice that counselors would give today. However, I would say, even though as a parent, you want them to be, organized, you want to get your kids on board and have them take responsibility. But every once in a while, they need a push. They need a kind word. They need a lift up. And that's something that you can do that gives them a fresh start, because trust me, it'll go back to the same way it was. Or, hire an organizer for you. If you need it, hire an organizer for them if they need it. And if anyone's listening to this, all they need to do is email us at the show at info@time2refocus.com. That's info@time2refocus.com. And if they are looking for an organizer or a coach or something like that, we can certainly make some recommendations and hopefully help them if they're in a situation where they really need some help. And that can be for teens and children and adults, but even, spouses, because what happens is when the other spouse does not have ADHD and they're living with someone with ADHD, and better yet, with a child with ADHD, they've got it with the spouse and the child, it's a lot to overcome. It's a lot to deal with. And sometimes they don't know the best ways to deal with that. And a coach or an organizer can kind of come between and help give them some guidelines or advice or calmness or some ideas of how to de-stress and make that less stressful for everyone involved. Case in point, like my child or my husband, like with myself and my child, we both have ADHD. So, but he's very, calming, very attentive and very patient, which is awesome. But overall, embrace it, laugh about it, have fun with it. Don't laugh at them, laugh with them, and, take life easy. Because every day can be a challenge. Every day can be a struggle. I was reading a blog post of someone that had ADHD, and she said, "Oh my God, I got like 20 browsers open." And I looked down at my computer and I was like, okay, I got the same thing. And I didn't even comment on that one because I would be admitting guilt. And So if somebody wants to find you and they think, wow, this interview was so great. She's, a great blogger and she's got a lot of ideas and great products to talk about and that kind of thing. How do people find you?
So just go to 5minutesformom.com, and it's actually spelled with the digit 5. But if you spell it wrong, we actually own several derivations of the name with spelling mistakes to try to get you there. But basically it's 5 with the digit 5 minutes, 4 as in F-O-R, mom.com. And you can, when you first go there, you should get a little notification trigger come up to be notified for new posts. So you can do that. You can also sign up for our newsletter. We don't email very often with our newsletter. And again, since I'm disorganized, I tend to not email out on the regular basis that I always intend on doing. But then of course you can follow us on social media. We're on all the channels with our name as 5 minutes for mom. So if you're an Instagram type of person, we're on Instagram. I don't post as often on Instagram because these days, because of the perfectionism of Instagram is again to make very polished photos and that type of thing. In the old days, our Instagrams were very casual. Nowadays, they're more sort of perfected crafts or recipes, that type of thing on our Instagram. And then on Twitter, I love to get more political on Twitter and chat a lot about dyslexia and ADHD topics on Twitter.
Right. I have, we have all different types of age groups that work for us. We have interns, we have the younger adults that work for us. We have individuals in their 30s and then also in their late 40s and in their 50s. So we kind of get a good scope of what's happening, what's unique, what's working, what doesn't working or what's not working. And so when it comes to social media, I always look to our younger staff to say, hey, what do you think of this? Because that is their specialty. And the one thing that we do is we always include everyone on our staff and we will say, you know, what do you think about this? How did this impact you? Did you like this article? Did you like this podcast? Did you like this product? You know, where do you feel like we should be going? And we like to include them all ages because we're a team. And I think that's really crucial. And I think that changes. And I think we have to change with the times and change, you know, our product lines as they fit our audience. Who is your competition, Susan? And please don't feel like you have to name them. Just who are your competitors to kind of give us a sense of your world? Is it, you know, bloggers or is it moms who are bloggers or just, again, bloggers in general?
That's a great question and a great word is the competitors. We in the blogging world really talk about and how we like to treat our competitors as sort of collaborators and colleagues and friends because we really do work together a lot and a lot more than other competitors would. So for instance, when I ran e-commerce toy stores, so I'd mentioned to you before that from 2005 to 2012, that was a great time for dropshipping model businesses. So we, even though I live in Canada, we ran two e-commerce, what I would say, generalize them as toy stores, but basically one of them was called Pedal Carson Retro Collectibles and the other was Rocking Horse Love. And in both of them, we focused on a lot of kids' furniture and large ticket toys. So things like pedal cars and rocking horses, big item toys. And so we would drop ship those all through the state. So we didn't hold inventory. And so it was quite funny because we didn't even ship to Canada, despite the fact we live in Canada. We tried shipping to Canada a few times, but it's such a hassle. So most of the time, all of the business was done all through the states. But the point of that being, in that business, your competitors were real competitors. Like you would look at their websites and you'd be sort of, you're like competing and you weren't, we did happen to be friends with a couple of our competitors in that business as well, but mostly they're more traditional style competitors. Whereas in blogging, my competitors are my friends and that we would get together before COVID days, we would all go to conferences regularly.
Right. Because there are blogging conferences, right?
Oh my word. Yes. So in the good old days, from 2008 through 2000 and I think we around 2015-ish around there, we stopped going to conferences so much. But like for instance, in 2010, 11, 12, Janice used to speak at a lot of the conferences. I think she spoke at 9 conferences one year. So the relationships that we would build were so important in the blogging world, the in-person relationships, you'd become friends. And then, cause then you'd collaborate and basically you'd lift each other up. So you'd contribute to each other's blogs. You'd link to each other's blogs. We would read, share on social media, for instance, I need to fill up my Pinterest feed with great content. So I'm going to share my competitors' content as well. Right. So we don't think of each other so much as competitors, but who would they be? They would be, I suppose, other mom bloggers that are sharing similar types of content. But again, we help each other.
Hey, I always say karma goes a long way because showing kindness to others always comes back to you. Because interesting enough, in I own an executive search firm and there was a candidate that I interviewed and he was so interested in our company, Refocus the Creative Office, that he actually was a foster parent to children. And I sent him a box of our products just because I thought they could really be helpful to his kids that he keeps. And get this, he wrote the most amazing article about us and included information on Refocus the Creative Office on the podcast and as well on our search firm. And so, you know, who knew, right? And we didn't ask for that. It was just so kind of him to do that. In addition, we put kindness in all of our mission statements. So it's something that we take very, we put top of mind in this corporation that how we treat people is so important. And it was so great. And I was so touched. I was thinking, wow, you know, why would you do that? And I said to him, I said, you know, thank you so much. And he said, of course. And so that it was a big reminder of how, you know, kindness goes a long way. And in that world, in the executive search world, I always say that we treat people, you know, our candidates as good as our clients, or our clients as good as our candidates, because both can be in both of those positions. A candidate can be tomorrow's CEO, and that CEO tomorrow could, you know, be our new client. So there's a lot of different angles in that situation. So for you, Susan, I'm going to ask you some really crazy questions, but I want our listeners to know more about you. So let's say, Susan, that you were not going to be a blogger in life, that you were going to be something else in a different career. What would you be, and what would you have been if you had not chosen this career?
It's such a good question, and something that I think about all the time, because it's one of the things with having ADHD is that we often want to do everything. There's so many jobs that I'd want to do.
Junkies, right?
Oh my gosh. And there's so many different jobs that I'd want to do. And oh, there's so much I would want to do. My dream job, if there was no money involved, right, if we weren't worrying about money, is to be a social worker. Isn't that so ridiculous?
No, I love that. I love that.
I considered going into social work back when I was in university at UBC, but I looked at the amount of money that you get paid, the amount of work, school work that you still have to do, and then looked at the current unsatisfactory political system, which structure that they have to work in. And obviously I had to say, well, that's just not a good career choice. So yeah, I did not do that because it's just not set up for success. But ultimately, I truly love helping people. And I know that that sound can sound cliche, but I'm going to tell you the honest reason why people will say that cliche and why is it cliche is because the fact is when we help people, our brain releases serotonin, dopamine.
It is what feeds my soul. Every time I take my staff to a retreat or we go to a different city, I always make it a priority that they, you know, find someone that's been really great to them or helpful or went out of their way, whether it is the, you know, hotel bellman or the waitress or the flight attendant or the general manager of the hotel, whoever, and find out that person's name and then write about them. That, you know, we don't do that enough. It's almost a requirement because I say, while you're here, this is something that is important that I want you to do. And everyone that has worked for me has said that that has been a huge impact in their life personally. And also they've said, you know, I wouldn't have done that on my own. So thank you for showing me how to do that. And it's really rewarding, but more rewarding for them. However, as I convey to them that if more people, again, did that today, it would make our world such a better place. You know, when you mentioned, Susan, that one of the areas that you would have considered would have been a social worker, I was on the board of CASA for 12 years. I was president and vice president, and I really got an inside look of, you know, the role of a social worker, and they are so overwhelmed and so underpaid, and they do such a great job, but it's hard to get to all of the children. And it really opened my eyes to really understand that area. So if you're interested in foster a child, or if you're interested in working in social work or something, check into it, do some research and find out, you know, how it fits into your lifestyle and what you can give back. And to that point, one of my biggest concerns that no one is talking about this, it's really concerning to me, is that through this pandemic, you know, all of the children that are in homes that we may not be able to know what's going on or to monitor them, that I hope we have some kind of advocacy to check on those children. Because when parents are stressed and they're trying to teach at home, sometimes they take it out on their children. So again, I would plead to anyone listening to this, if they get really upset or uptight at home, just kind of walk away for a few moments. And as I always say, take a moment, stop and refocus, take a breath and take yourself out of the situation and then go back. I'm so passionate about children. And even though I only have one, it's always on top of mind of helping children maybe that are, that need extra help. And so if you know a family or someone that needs that break, give them a call, see how they're doing. I'm so passionate about children. And even though I only have one, it's always on top of mind of helping children maybe that are, that need extra help. And so if you know a family or someone that needs that break, give them a call, see how they're doing. If it were up to me, I would adopt so many. But when I remarried, my husband looked at me and he said, I think we're good, because a child with ADHD is awesome, but it can be challenging. So, but anyone who does that, I have so much admiration for them, and good for you. Good for all of you out there that do that. Okay. So second question, Susan. So let's say when you were younger and you were growing up and, you know, you were going into that computer science degree area. What was it that made you interested in that area that you wanted to go into the computer science area?
That, oh, again, such an interesting, looking back and analyzing my academics and trying to figure out, it was a very difficult time in my life to try to figure out what to do. And to be honest, it was very a tormented decision from depression and untreated ADHD and all these types of things. It's a long story, but to cut it down really as fast as possible. Basically, I did my first year at UBC. That's our university here in British Columbia, UBC, University of British Columbia, and one of the universities here. And I started off my first year there and I went through a massive deep depression. That was my first really falling deep into depression. And I look back and so much would be from untreated ADHD and perfectionism. Not knowing what to do with my life and what my life was going to be. And sort of that fear of failure was so deep. I mean, I had 100% in math, okay, in UBC. I had 95. I had 95 in physics, 96 in chemistry, something like this, okay? I was a good student, but I lived with such intense fear of failure that I truly believed I had to kill myself if I failed a test, okay? A lot of this all came from stuff that really nowadays we would know a bit better to recognize anxiety in a kid, to recognize ADHD, but just my extraordinary anxiety and fear of failure. So basically I fell into this pit of depression there's various factors. I could talk for hours about it, but point being that in my first year at UBC, I got very depressed but I was trying to figure out what to do with my life. And I was so good at math, ironically, because I can't add two numbers in my head to save my soul. I now understand that that's because ADHD, I can't see the numbers in my head to hold them, but give me advanced calculus or algebra. As soon as math got harder, I got better at it. Okay. So I figured, well, what am I going to do with my life? I guess I'll become a math teacher. It's like kind of all I could sort of figure out what to do.
You would have been great at that.
I would have been a good math teacher, exactly. And that's one of the reasons I'm really enjoying teaching my kids math right now.
Yeah.
I'm having a lot of fun with it, to be honest. But again, I looked at it and thought, I will be bored after 5 years. And what am I going to do? And I sort of knew already that being bored was physically painful for me. Like I couldn't handle being bored. But at the same time, I was so good academically at sciences and math, but I didn't know what to do with my life. So I dropped out. Oh, I started my second year of math doing a math degree at UBC. I did my first 2 weeks and I actually got so depressed and I dropped out before I was actually physically, like before the first 2 weeks sort of happened right at the end. So that before there was any record of me kind of being there and trying to figure out what am I going to do with my life? So I decided to take some time off to try to figure out, am I really going to be a math teacher? Am I going to be satisfied? And I also looked at the finances of it. I'm like, this is ridiculous. You get your math degree and you're going to get paid crap and it's going to be awful. Right. From the way that society treats teachers, similar to the way society treats social workers, you know? So I ended up going to do some computer programming classes at BCIT, which is our technical school, at night school to try to get my computer skills better for when I go back the next year to go back to university to do my math degree. I said it was taking, and then as I was doing these programming courses, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm really good at this. And you can actually get a decent job doing that much better than being a math teacher. So I really enjoyed computer programming especially at school. And I'm going to tell you why. I could put in my headphones, listen to music and get into the zone.
Right. Music. He definitely listens to music.
Mm-hmm. As you know, with, you know, your son, he talked before in that podcast of listening to music and being able to get into flow and get into the zone.
He talked about
listening to music. And the thing is with me, with math and with computer programming was that I could listen to music while I was doing it. Unlike when I was studying, you know, arts kind of classes where you have to be reading and that type of thing. You can't listen to music. You can't get into the flow the same way. Mm-hmm. So for me with computer programming, I was intellectually stimulated, which was so key for my ADHD that I had to be challenged. I had to be doing something. So with math and computer programming, it works actually really well with an ADHD brain. Ironically, you wouldn't think so, but it does because you're doing You're not just reading,
right?
So you're doing something and you can get into flow. So I would get into flow. I get into the zone. I could program for, you know, all night long, 12 hours, sit there and program with, you know, no interruptions and feel fantastic. And then the problem is in real life, in the business world, is it's not so after several years, like I said, it's not so intellectually stimulating anymore. You're doing a lot of boring stuff when you're programming for business. And I'd been there, done that. So my problem was I got bored and I had to leave.
But truly, I am in awe of you. I mean, you inspire me and it's truly incredible what you're doing in life. So I could talk to you all day long. However, I want to ask you two last questions. So the first is this, you know, whether you like Dr. Bill or not, or watch him, you know, I look back and in history, he was one of the first individuals that brought it to media that you would talk about problems, you know, on the air and at least bring those to the forefront. So I think education is so important of talking about it versus hiding it and sweeping it under the rug. I remember when that happened and I thought, you know, this is really great. At least this is going to spur others to at least open up and have that open dialogue about, you know, mental health and anxiety and ADHD and autism and whatever those areas are, you know, or even just plain, you know, marriage and relationships, he would get people talking about that. One of the questions that many of our listeners ask us that they would like us to ask our guest is about failure. They, you know, they're curious about, you know, if you've faced failure, how you've gotten through it. So if you don't mind, if you have faced failure and gotten through it, if you wouldn't mind sharing that, I would be so gracious and appreciative of you doing that.
Absolutely. I think failure is one of the most important topics we need to talk to about our kids. We need to talk about it early. We need to celebrate failure, talk about what it really is. And like I said, my intense fear of failure had me literally suicidal. Like literally, I had a huge breakdown during an exam, basically like a total a panic attack during at BCIT during one of my, it was during a statistics exam. I knew the material so well, like it was no problem, but I went into like a complete panic attack where I had to sit there for, it was a 2-hour exam. It was an open book exam. And I was sitting there for 2 hours. For the first hour of the exam, I was just trying not to throw up and leave the room. And I had really felt like if I left that room, I had to kill myself. I truly felt that I had to do that because I would, it would be failure. And so I managed to not leave the room. I managed to not kill myself. I eventually got around to writing the exam and I finished the exam eventually, but you know, well, the exam ended and I had filled out most of the questions by then. Point of the matter being that if I had only had a better relationship with failure from the beginning. And again, I talk about my mom. I love my mom so much. She has been the most influential, important person in my life.
That was going to be a question I was going to ask you is, you know, your mom, you know, has your mom inspired you?
Yeah. Well, my mom, it ties the two together because my mom is an amazing, amazing person, but she also grew up in an age where we didn't talk about things like perfectionism and failure and these types of things. So she inadvertently passed on some of her bad habits to me. And that one of that was a fear of failure. She had an enormous fear of failure for herself. And so without meaning to, she passed that on to me. And my fear of failure was so much also like in a fear of letting her down or of her being scared of like, you know, of her projecting that fear onto me. And again, I don't blame her for any of it. She's an amazing, amazing woman. And I have just nothing but the most respect. She turns 80 this year and she's been our bookkeeper. She's still actually our bookkeeper. I have to start.
I love that because in fact, I bring my mom every once in a while and to work with us. And I love her insight into what we're doing as well.
Are those toy stores? That was my mom's idea. And we worked the three of us together on the toy stores.
I love it.
So she's an amazing woman, but she definitely passed on the that perfectionism and fear of failure. And so I was so afraid of it. But I definitely, so throughout my life, I tried so hard never to fail as I was so afraid of it. But there's definitely times where situations you could label them sort of as failure or as recognizing that something needed to change and then refocusing and redirecting myself. Mm-hmm. So you could look at me having to drop out of university as a failure, but instead I don't actually ever feel that it was that because instead what it was me listening to my body that was using depression to sort of as a massive alert like a big siren. Something's going wrong. You're making wrong choices because this is not making you happy. Do you know what I mean? Right. So the thing is that depression, by listening to my body, at first, even though I didn't listen to my body enough that it had to put me into full force depression. But when we are experiencing depression, oftentimes, and anxiety, oftentimes it's our body trying to tell us, to alert us to a situation that isn't healthy, right? And so the fact is, the schooling that I was doing didn't end up being what was going to make me happy. And by listening to it and saying, okay, I am getting depressed, I need to stop, move away from this system, reevaluate, mm-hmm. and figure out what's going on. I got medication, of course, and I needed help. I see a doctor, had to readjust the serotonin levels in my brain.
Good for you.
Which I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. With medication. I've been on Paxil since I was 20 years old, something like that. I've been on some form of medication since I was basically 19, I think 18, 19. And so I had to use what my body was telling me, what my brain was telling me to readjust and realign where I was going in life. And so you can look at them as failures in a way, or as just having to reassess and redirect. And same thing with my stores. Now, the thing is, the stores, we had to close the stores. Was that a failure? No, I wouldn't say so. It's simply you had to close the business and move on because big box stores had shrunken down. So Walmart, the products that we were selling,
right?
Walmart eventually, they would, the Walmart as well as mostly Amazon. So Amazon, of course, would watch what its drop shippers are selling. So for instance, or what's selling online, because they have all the analytics. And then when they'd see, oh, these cute rocking horses, these are selling. Well, then what they do is then they just buy up the whole lot of them and sell them for less than we as retailers can even buy them at wholesale, right?
Right.
So basically at that point, we had to look at the business and go, okay, if we keep going, it will become a failure. So instead we close now while we're still making profit,
right?
Close now and then realign the business. And the same with the blog. So, the way we ran the blogs before, we used to have, and then you'll see in my bio that I'd said, a network of parenting blogs. So in the early days, we ran a network. We had 5 minutes for parenting, 5 minutes for faith, 5 minutes for special needs. We had these different sister sites, okay, where we had a dozen different writers on each of these blogs. And we had a whole, so within during those days back in 2012, to be honest, I probably had 100 different writers writing for me at different times. I won't even know all the names of all the people that wrote for me and all the people that I'd paid through the years. I won't even know their names, all of
right.
them. Okay.
Right.
But the thing is that times change. So I could have still kept going with the same business model and it would have hit failure, but I don't. I sort of see that failure will come if I don't adjust course. Okay.
Right.
So we adjust course and then that's how it works.
I always say this is a journey. It's your journey. It's not anyone else's. It's your journey and it's not a race.
Absolutely.
It's not a race.
It's a winding road that we're enjoying the journey as we go.
Yeah. And sometimes we are our own worst enemy. And sometimes we really have to take care of ourselves. And one area is music. Music can always help you bring you up, bring you down, calm, serenity. Music is so powerful. Put your headphones in, take a walk, get away, and just take that time for yourself. With that being said, Susan, we have this amazing question that we ask everyone at the end of our podcast. And that question is this. Let's say you have that really, really important meeting that you're going to, or that pitch or that presentation or something that's just really important. And it may not be your best day, but you've got to have game on. You've got to be focused. You got to be ready and you got to be, on top of your game. What do you do? And to get focused in terms of the music, what do you listen to? What is the artist or the genre? What, when you get in your car, what is it that you, Susan, what is it that you listen to?
I love this question. I've loved listening to all the answers from your, because I've listened to a lot of your podcasts so far, and I'm going to listen to every single one.
Oh, I love that. She actually listened to so many of our podcasts. And so I asked her before the show, which one did you like the most?
Yeah, my favorite was the one where you interviewed your son, because I just love that.
Yeah.
And I loved how you ask everyone this question. And one of my favorite answers for this music question from one of your guests was, he said, "Let It Be" from the Beatles.
Oh, I have to stop you there. So that came from a business coach that we interviewed on the podcast who lives in Canada. His name is Robert Powell. He was the business coach that I had hired. And that was one of his song, the suggestions that really worked for him.
And it was a great one. It was a great one. So I've loved listening to all those recommendations. So I thought about it. And what I did was I looked at my music list in my on my phone and thought, okay, yeah, what would I pull up? What do I pull up when I want to get really sort of inspired? And I've always loved classic rock. I'm quite an old person these days, and that I don't listen to the more modern music. I'm like, my joke around with my kids, they're like, "Don't you know who this is?" I'm like, "No, I don't know who that is."
I just don't know what it is.
I'm stuck in the old days. I like classic music. So I love Queen, and We Are the Champions is, I think, got to be one of the most classic, inspirational, put it on in your car, blare it loud, and just sing along with it. And just to get revved up, I would say, yeah, We Are the Champions.
That is great. We're working to put together a playlist of all of these songs. We've just been so busy and had so many great guests for the podcast. It's been a very exciting time. So Susan, first of all, I feel like I've met a friend for life, and I'm so thankful that you had time to be on our show. I admire you. I admire your sister. I admire your company. And, you know, I'm very proud of your achievements and your success that you've had in your company. And I'm so grateful that you took the time to be on our show. So thank you so much for taking time to be a part of this.
This has been so much fun. And I'm so glad you reached out to me. Like I said, I'm loving your podcast. I've literally listened to, at least probably 10 of them so far right now. I don't know. I'm through most of them already. And I'm going to listen to every single episode. I absolutely love it. And when you get that playlist of all these songs, absolutely going to love that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's kind of been crazy in our business. We have 4 new products that we're going to be launching soon. So you might make sure you subscribe to our social media or our website. And you can find us at time2refocus.com or refocusangela.com for our podcast. And we will let you know when those products are coming out. So thank you, Susan. Again, her name is Susan Cavaretto. She is with 5 Minutes for Mom. She runs an amazing blog with her sister. And I know that name is Italian because my mother's main name is Andrietti, who's Italian as well. So we have that little link in common as well. So when you have time, take a moment, go look at their site. They were so gracious to put a lot of reviews on our products as well, on the products for Refocus at Creative Office. So you'll definitely want to check those out too. And again, we thank you for that. And as soon as I'm off of this podcast call, I will be following all of her social media blogs as well. And I'm excited to get to know them and what their products are that they're working on and reviewing and recipes and everything else. So thank you again, Susan. It's been delightful to get to know you.
Thank you. All the best.
This podcast has been brought to you by Refocus the Creative Office. Follow us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube, just about anywhere. We have so much going on, and we've got 4 new products coming out. So you'll want to stay tuned. Also, some of the new episodes that are coming out on the podcast are going to be amazing. Really, really unique individuals that they are definitely people that you will want to learn how they focus and how they refocus. Have a great week.